The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome to 2014 on It Came From Radio. This is your host, Mark Toro speaking. Usually we have our co-hosts in the studio, but they're both out with a cold. So yeah, I'm going to be all by my lonesome here, which isn't an unusual thing. It's rare, but it has happened before. So if anybody's having trouble listening to me on the air, you can go online, www.am1240wgbb.com, and listen to the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see me at the high-definition web camera. That is unless you're listening to us in the future, which would be your present, and then I'll be in the past, and I won't be here. I'll be somewhere else. Unless you're exactly 7 days ahead, and then you'll be seeing me, but talking about stuff in the future, which is actually the past. Yeah, at least Brian enjoys that.
You finally had a chance to go through that monologue without
thing,
interruption.
Yes, that's right.
You go, guy.
So I guess we'll just take it away with the news. And for the foreseeable future, at least I'm going to try to squeeze this in every time, the news will be brought to you by the bastards at Belmore Towing. If you want to get ripped off on any of your car needs, make sure you contact these guys in Belmore, New York, at 516-781-0200, where they love to overcharge people and try to run a unscrupulous but legal business practices. So we're going to do the sad news first. Let's see here. Where is it? Here we go. James Avery, best known for playing Uncle Phil on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, he died Tuesday night at a Los Angeles hospital due to complications from open-heart surgery. Avery amassed dozens of TV and film roles over the years, including appearances on The Closer, That 70s Show, Grey's Anatomy, The Brady Bunch movie, Dr. Dolittle, and of course, he was the voice of the Shredder in the 80s cartoon, The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He was 68. It's always, in today's day and age, it always amazes me how there's always complications from whatever procedure you have. And the complications always lead to death. It's like, oh, there's a complication and it's all worked out. No, it's complications leading to death. It's kind of a sad thing. He was only 68. I remember when 68 was old. Now it's not as much old as it was back in the day. But he will be missed. Let's see. Moving along, I have tons of news here, so I'm just going to go down the list. And let's see. In papers filed Tuesday, actually just a couple weeks ago Tuesday, in a federal court in Philadelphia, Stanley Media, which is not connected to Stanley at all, seeks a declaratory judgment that it, Stanley Media, which is not associated with Stan Lee, and not Disney, who's associated with Disney, or Marvel, owns Spider-Man, Iron Man, X-Men, Thor, and other superheroes. Okay, so this is how it works. In 1988, Marvel CEO Isaac Perlmutter used the company's bankruptcy to end its $1 million a year lifetime contract with Stan Lee. So, up until 1998, Stan Lee was getting paid $1 million a year for life. So that way they can use his characters, and that way he's been the comic frontrunner, and everybody loves him, as opposed to all the other creators who got, you know, a pittance for their work. But Stan Lee was the figurehead, and that's why he was always showing up, always talking about Marvel, because he paid $1 million a year lifetime contract. But in 1998, Marvel claimed for bankruptcy, which is amazing if you think about it where they are now. So what they did, they ended the contract, negating the writer's assignment to the company and his rights to his creations. It also let Stan Lee form Stan Lee Entertainment, which later merged with Stan Lee Media. So, at that point, Stan Lee Media was associated with Stan Lee. The company, in turn, filed for Chapter 11 in February of 2001, shortly after Stan Lee Media emerged from federal bankruptcy protection in 2006. Its shareholders began a series of lawsuits against Marvel, Stan Lee, Disney's, and others to assert the company's stake in Stan Lee's Marvel co-creations. Of course, all those efforts have been unsuccessful. All the lawsuits filed by Stan Lee Media shareholders hinge on a sequence of events that took place between August 1998, when Marvel terminated Lee's employment, and November 1998, when Lee entered into his new agreement with Marvel, and he signed over his likeness and any claims to the characters. So the dispute is whether or not he actually signed over his characters or not during this small amount of time. So, since 1998, Stan Lee Media has long asserted that Stan Lee transferred the company rights to his creations and his likeness to Stan Lee Media, so he was not able to give them back to Marvel or now Disney when he got signed back on in November of 1998. So, basically, they ended the contract with Stan Lee. Marvel ended the contract with Stan Lee. Stan Lee made his own company, which in turn Stan Lee owns his characters. Then Marvel said, hey, let's make a new contract. And Stan Lee said, okay, I want money. And he went back to them while his own company, Stan Lee Media, was going into bankruptcy. And so they're saying that because he was in bankruptcy in one company, he can't transfer the rights over to the other one. Whew. And of course, all this is because Avengers is one of the highest grossing movies of all time, and there's money to be had. If there was no money to be had, nobody would care at all. So, let's see what happens in the future with this legal negotiations. Personally, I can see both sides of the argument. You know, work for hire is something that people do when you work at a company. This is what you do. You know, you're paid to do your work, you make the work, and the company owns the rights. However, the creator should get some type of recognition and monetary compensation. So it's kind of important to go both ways. And of course, if there's anybody out there who wants, you know, everybody wants a hand in the cookie jar, then it's not fair to those people, because then the company will go out of business and then no one will be able to enjoy the characters. But the creators should get some type of compensation. They don't have to be millionaires, but they should be well off because their creations are doing quite well. And so, yes, it is not a legal thing where they have no rights and the company doesn't have to do it, but it should be just for good faith in that sense. Speaking of Marvel, in a recent interview, when asked about his future as Wolverine, Hugh Jackman had this to say. I don't have an Australian accent, so I'm just going to read it in my executive voice. I don't know whether or not I will do this next movie. I'm really proud of The Wolverine and excited to develop something with Jim Mangold from the beginning, because this is a great ride. That's exciting to see what we've come up with. But I have a very high expectation of what it would need to be for me to star in it. And if it doesn't reach those expectations, I will not be doing it. So, that means that if Hugh Jackman is not satisfied with the script, there will not be a new Wolverine movie, or there will not be a Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman in it. I'm sure they're going to find a way to bring and dump somebody else back in, probably as a young Wolverine, if Hugh Jackman doesn't do it, or this could just be another money play, just like Robert Downey Jr. said that he doesn't want to do Iron Man anymore. Of course, they're going to give him a little money, so that way he'll be in Avengers 3, because as it has been, Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. is what's carrying the franchise. They have not gone beyond that. You know, all the other movies make money, but Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. is the Trojan horse. It's the one bringing in all the cash. And there is no script for another Wolverine movie yet, But as it has been announced that there's going to be a sequel to the sequel of The First Class, which is out in May. It's going to be Days of Future Past. It's X-Men Part 2, which is a follow-up to The Wolverine, and it's going to involve all the characters from all the X-Men franchises in all the forms. And he's already announced that there's going to be a follow-up to that, which will be called The Age of Apocalypse, which if you comic book fans are aware of, will feature in more alternate universe and time-traveling stuff. So, Wolverine is going to be a big part of that, and they will not let that franchise die. Let's see what else. Moving along with another interview. J.J. Abrams has this to say about the handling of The Secret of Khan being released in the latest Star Trek sequel. He says, "Personally, as I've stated before, I do think that the entire matter was woefully mishandled and may have well confounded potential viewers rather than shielding them from quote-unquote spoilers. I'm a strong believer that hyper-secrecy on a film or TV project can often be detrimental than constructive for two reasons. Reason number one, my personal belief is the knowledge of a spoiler is going to diminish one's ability to enjoy a story. Then the story in question isn't being conveyed strongly enough to begin with. Strong stories, quote-unquote classic stories, after all, are the ones we can enjoy over and over again, regardless of our foreknowledge. Reason number two, too much secrecy regarding a project often involves audiences and fans to theorize and imagine and hope and conjecture, which is fun enough, admittedly. On the other hand, what fans and audiences end up imagining, conjuring, or anticipating is often wilder, bolder, or more imaginative than what ends up on the screen. Thus, ironically, the quote-unquote secrecy being used to preserve a film or TV show's purity may inadvertently set up their followers for disappointment and a dreaded, quote, oh, that's all it is reaction? Again, I know these sentiments will seem reckless or alien to many, but they're based on decades of experience in my field and on realities and patterns I've seen unfold time and time again during the issuance of a number of different films and TV shows. I can't help but think that the more filmmaker creators should believe in their work and let their work speak for itself rather than attempt to program or control the audience reaction to it." Now, too bad Hassan isn't here, because he would have jumped all over that. It's interesting that he would say that. I was at a panel a couple of years ago with Stephen King, and he kind of said the same thing. He said he doesn't really feel about spoilers, because if you've seen a movie once, you already know what's going to happen, and you still will enjoy it a second time. He also said that no matter what he can come up with, the audience will always have a better ending for his stories in mind. So there really is no point. I'm kind of on both sides with this. You know, on one hand, you think you don't want to ruin everything for people. I mean, there's a couple of shows that I watch, and I try not to find out anything about it before I go into it. And of course, then again, there's certain shows or movies or projects that I want to know everything about it before I go into it. So it kind of is one, it's just a matter of where you're coming from. Now, what I find interesting is that he uses this argument for Star Trek II, which I've said many times how upset I am and how he rehashed his own ideas in this movie and parading it out as a new thing. And even last week, which was last year, we mentioned how the revelation of Khan in the movie was an anti-revelation, because if you're in the movie in and of itself, as the work, as he said, you should be proud of the work in and of itself, you would be like, who the hell is Khan? Who is this guy? Why should I care that he's Khan? And then, at the same time, he tries to make it that, oh, if you're a fan of the stuff beforehand, you should automatically know who this is, and now you're involved more than the characters are. So, but once again, he's making tons of money, and I'm sitting here all of my lonesome in a radio station. So I guess he has the ability to say things such as that. And speaking of people saying things such as that, a couple of weeks ago we mentioned my arch nemesis, Shia LaBeouf, has been in some trouble. It turns out that Shia LaBeouf's short film HowardCantor.com, which premiered in the Cannes Film Festival in 2012 and was posted online just a few weeks back, is a nearly word-for-word adaptation of comic book artist Daniel Clowes' 2007 short comic called Justin M. Diamanto. Daniel Clowes had no knowledge of the film, and Shire responded, saying that he was lost in the creative process and neglected to follow proper accreditation, and that being inspired by someone else's ideas to produce something new and different is creative work. People did not find that, people did not appreciate that he basically said, well, I kind of forgot to mention who this thing came from, but it's still kind of my own idea. So then he goes on to apologize. And as we are in today's day and age, you want to apologize, you go on Twitter. And he posted many tweets on what he said. And almost instantly, it turns out that his quote-unquote apologies were lifted from other apologies as well, such as Elliot Spitz's apology. And he said, word for word, "I do not believe that in the long run, this is about individuals. It is about ideas, the public good, and doing what is best. I apologize." And he also plagiarized Russell Crowe's apology on Twitter, which said, "Personal beliefs aside, I realize some will interpret this as me mocking the rituals and traditions of others. Not the case. I am very sorry." And he even went so far as to take a tweet from Nelson Mandela's interpreter at the funeral, who said, "I was alone in a very dangerous situation. I tried to control myself and not to show the world what was going on. I am very sorry." And he goes on and on to use other apologies from Mark Zuckerberg and even Alec Baldwin. Then finally, on New Year's Eve, just a couple of days ago, Shia LaBeouf tweeted, quote, "I'm sorry for all the plagiarized tweets. They were all unintelligent, ambiguous, and needlessly hurtful." And then he goes on to say, 2014 resolution, I need to work on being less a controversial tweeter. So, tweeting, as I'm told, is 40 characters. So that's spaces and letters or numbers, whatever, 40 characters. So he has to steal 40 characters from other people, as opposed to just saying, "My bad, I messed up, this is the guy who did it, here's some money." No, he goes, "I'm going to steal other people's apologies for stealing other people's work." That is the greatest idea I've ever heard of in my life. The ridiculousness of it just is mind-boggling to me. But, once again, he has tons of money. So, that says that. All right, let's see what else I got. Oh, speaking of more money, which seems to be the theme of this week. Series creator and former showrunner of AMC's The Walking Dead, Frank Darabont, known for writing The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption, claims that in a lawsuit that the network has been stiffing him on tens of millions of dollars in profits by licensing the show to its own network affiliates at below market rates, due to ABC's AMC's decision to produce the series in-house instead of with an independent studio, which resulted that Frank lost out up to 12.5% of the profits. Darabont said he originally agreed to the production arrangement after AMC promised he would be fairly compensated for working, quote, 20-hour days and was become the highest-rated premiere in AMC's history. At the end of season 1, The Walking Dead was the most watched cable series in cable history, and in the middle of season 2, they canned Frank Darabont. Of course, no word from AMC right now. I find this quite interesting because The Walking Dead was made by Kirkman, who made the comic, and he's not having any problem with this at all. So this is where work for hire comes into play. I mean, maybe he's a show's creator, and he signed a deal saying, hey, you're going to be working the long hours and you'll be quote-unquote handsomely paid. So he better come up with a number before you say, okay, I'll be handsomely paid, because in studio world, handsomely paid is not what you think. In your mind, you're thinking I'm going to get gold bars and tons of money. there was a Woody Woodpecker cartoon where the wolf was going to get Woody Woodpecker for $5,000. And he had a little float balloon, and he put up, and he's like, what am I going to do with $5,000? And he goes, a boat, money, women, money, a car, in his mind. And at the end of the cartoon, he doesn't catch Woody Woodpecker, and he goes, $5,000, and the money grows wings and flies away. And he goes, a car, and the car explodes. And he goes, a boat, and the boat sinks. And he goes, women. And Woody Woodpecker winds up with the women. That's what this guy was thinking, and that's what happened to him. Boy. It's amazing how much all this news is about money. And speaking of more money, one of my favorite franchises, The Naked Gun, is coming back to theaters. However, it's going to have Ed Helms from the Hangover films stepping in a role as Lieutenant Frank Drebin. For those of you who don't know, The Naked Gun is a trilogy of movies starring the late, great Leslie Nielsen from the Zucker Brothers, which is based off of a television series called Police Squad. Police Squad was on ABC. It lasted about a handful of episodes. And then somebody decided to go make it into a movie many years later. So a lot of people didn't even know it was based off of the series Police Squad. The series and the movies were pretty much hand in hand. They were exactly the same thing, which is funny how the series was unsuccessful, yet the movie franchises were. It turns out one of the Zucker Brothers was quoted as saying that back then, and probably even still now, people don't watch TV. They kind of watch TV and do something else. They have the TV on, they look at it, but they don't really pay attention to what's going on. So when there's a lot of sight gags and double innuendos and stuff happening in the background of a quote-unquote straightforward detective show, the audience missed it. But when you're in the theaters, you're sitting down and you're forced to watch the screen. Of course, that was back in the day. Now people are still doing phones and texting and stuff in the theater. So that goes to show how much things have changed. And let's see, we're about our halfway point. I have so much more news to go, and that's what we're going to be doing, is an all-new show. So we'll be right back with A Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back where we came from the radio, the All News 2014 edition. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. And I forgot to mention that Brian is also in the studio with me, so I'm not all by myself. Which is
not completely, right?
Right.
But with the usual suspects, you are by yourself tonight.
Yes, yes, correct. And it also eliminates the possibility that both Hassan Godwin and Charlie Saladino are the same person, because they were switching off every couple of weeks. So we had one in the studio and one on the phone, but now they're both not here. So that's quite interesting. As I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about the news items, which has been piling up for the past couple of weeks. I've managed to have more news than I've been able to report on, which fortunately for me works out for today's episode. And I'm just going to go down, and a lot of stuff happened this past week, too. And of course, as I mentioned before, the news is brought to you by the Scumbags at Belmore Towing at 72720 Merrick Road in Belmore, New York. If you want to get ripped off for all your car needs, make sure you go to Belmore Towing in Belmore, Long Island. Let's see, what else can I take it away with? Oh, here's something of quite interesting. Previously on our show, we mentioned how Brian the dog in the Family Guy series was killed last year, quote unquote, never to be seen again. Well, it turns out that he was to be seen again, as Stewie, the baby of the show, went back in time and saved Brian from being hit by the car, which killed him. In response to this, Seth MacFarlane tweeted, "And thus ended our warm, fuzzy holiday lesson. Never take those you love for granted, for they can be gone in a flash." And of course, he continues to say, "I mean, you really didn't think we'd kill Brian, did you? Jesus, we'd have to be effing high." And he didn't use the word effing. And that's true Seth MacFarlane way. He, in my opinion, is one of the luckiest bastards out there. For those of you who do not know, Seth MacFarlane did the movie Ted, which was one of the highest grossing movies of last year. He has done the Family Guy franchise, which is one of the only television shows that has gotten canceled 3 times and is still on the air. He has a new deal with Fox, making a show about a Mexican, a border patrol on the Mexican border. He has 2 other shows, one got canceled, but he still has 2 other shows, The Cleveland Show and American Dad. And for those of you with those little fun fact things about Seth MacFarlane, he was one of the people who was supposed to be on the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center. He missed his plane, and he lived. So that's one of the luckiest bastards on the planet. He's mentioned a couple of times in interviews about how that's happened. He was like, he was cursing and yelling that he wanted to get on the plane, and they were like, no. So you know, sometimes bad things happen for good reasons. Let's see. Moving along to movie news. Sony has issued a press release announcing that they will have brought together a 5-man screenwriting team that will result and expand the Spider-Man Cinematic Universe, which sounds a lot like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and will result in films about both the Sinister Six and Venom. As we mentioned last week, the Sinister Six is Spider-Man's greatest villains, all teaming up to become the Sinister Six. There's 6 of them. Sinister Six, kind of an easy one. And then Venom, which is Spider-Man's greatest enemy, because he was part of himself. Studio has worked out deals with Jeff Pinkner, best known for his work on shows like Lost, Fringe, and Alias; Ed Solomon, whose most recent credit was the movie Now You See Me; and Drew Goddard, best known for his collaborations with Joss Whedon in the film Cabin in the Woods, in addition to Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman, who are the big wigs in television and movies right now. They are writing everything. Executives say, "These 5 writers will create a franchise brain trust to expand the universe for the brand and to develop continuous tone and thread throughout the films." Basically, what happened in layman's terms, Marvel decided that they were going to try an experiment, which was to make a whole bunch of movies and put them all together and make the Avengers. That's something that no one had ever thought of before. no one had ever even tried before, the closest thing I could think of was a movie called Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. And it was supposed to be based on a couple of books, and they were supposed to team up, but nobody went to see those movies, and it never happened. So Marvel went off and made a couple of movies, and then it kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger until they finally came with Avengers, which is the third highest grossing movie of all time, right after Titanic and Avatar. So now everybody says, hey, we can do that. We can make a whole bunch of movies and slap them all together. But they forget how long it took for this to happen. And as today's ADD age, they want it now. So DC has decided that they're going to go and make a giant movie of Justice League and split it off into many movies. And then they found out that wasn't going to work. So they decided to reboot the Superman franchise and make a lot of money. And then they're going to have another Batman Superman movie, which is coming up. And they've already incorporated Wonder Woman in it. And there's talk about adding other superheroes. So they might sneak in this movie as a Justice League movie, which is an Avengers for DC comic book world. Which I think is a very bad idea. And Fox also said, hey, we can do that. We have properties. So, as you see, the newest X-Men movie incorporates all the X-Men franchises, two groups, trying to get into one big movie, because they figure the more people you have, the better, the more money you're going to make. And then word comes out that Fox also owns the Fantastic Four. And after the second Fantastic Four, which was not very good, in my opinion, they have decided to reboot that and incorporate that into the X-Men universe as well. So there's going to be an X-Men cinematic universe for Fox, a Marvel cinematic universe for Disney, they haven't used the word yet, but they're probably going to call it the DC cinematic universe if the second movie comes out well. It's going to make money, but if it's good or not is a matter of opinion. And now Sony has their Spider-Man cinematic universe. Unfortunately for Spider-Man, they only have Spider-Man. So they have to figure out some way to make more money out of this, and they figure they're going to make movies about the villains. Amazing Spider-Man number 3 has a release date of June 10th, 2016, and Amazing Spider-Man 4 has a release date of May 4th, 2018. So they're already planning years in advance for these two movies, and they have no idea when the Venom movie or the Sinister Six movie is going to come out. I say they should focus on making one good movie at a time before moving on. I did not like the last Spider-Man movie because it took a lot of things that made Spider-Man out of the Spider-Man movie. He bought the web fluid online. You can't buy web fluid online. He made the web shooter out of himself, which is what he does in the comics, but he bought the web fluid online from Oscorp. So anybody working at Oscorp would be like, wow, somebody's buying this fluid, a lot of it. I wonder who that guy is. Like, they can so easily find out who Spider-Man is because he's using the money that he doesn't have to buy this web fluid, which anybody can obviously buy. So all someone has to do is steal Spider-Man's web shooter and they become Spider-Man 2. That's very disappointing. And let's see what else I have. Oh, speaking of more and more and more money, Harry Potter creator J.K. Rowling said that she is now working on a play about Harry Potter's life before he attended Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Rowling said in a statement that the play will, quote, explore the previous untold story of Harry's early years as an orphan and outcast. This is called Beating a Dead Horse, because you already have eight Harry Potter movies, if I'm not mistaken. And now they're going to make it a play about him before anything interesting happened to him. Who's going to want to see that? Who is going to want to see a play with the main character who becomes a wizard, who's not a wizard? You're alienating your entire fan base. It's like if you were making a movie about Dracula before he became Dracula. That is a dumb idea, as I'm sure Hassan would have said. J.K. Rowling will be a co-producer on the show, along with veteran British theater production Sonia Friedman and Colin Callender. The statement says that Rowling will collaborate with a writer, but will not write the script herself. She says, "Over the years, I have received countless approaches about turning Harry Potter into theatrical production, but Sonia and Colin's vision was the only one that really made sense to me, and that which had the sensitivity, intensity, and intimacy I thought appropriate for bringing Harry's story to the stage. No opening date has been set for the show."
You know, Mark, I'm sorry. I was just prepared for a female voice that you
got. I was going to do a female British voice. And I was like, nah.
You're not going to go with it. Okay.
No. I'm going to take a step back about this idea. I'm going to really say how bad the idea is. Sure, the Captain America movie set up who Captain America was before he became Captain America. However, the movie did have him become Captain America. No two ways about it. If the movie was all about him not becoming Captain America, and in the last 5 minutes of him was actually Captain America with the shield, it would have been a terrible, long, and boring movie. You can't have a two-hour play, as most plays are, about something that happened before the greatness. It's like making a play about baby Hitler. Like, nobody's going to care what he does before stuff went down. Why in the world would they even think that people would be interested in, because it's going to be called Harry Potter, I guess? I mean, and it's from the creator. So the creator ran out of ideas, which he only had one of, and they're going to go back to make the...
I have a question, Mark, if I may jump in. How complex... I mean, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter movies, so I have no clue. But I just wonder, how complex is his... I don't know, his personality, his life, his, is it Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing? I mean, is he deeply, multi-whatever?
From what I understand, obviously the books have more information about him than not, but they said that he was just an orphan, and then he just wound up going to Hogwarts. They really didn't focus on his backstory. It was just about a kid going to this magical school, and then stuff happened.
So they would have to really dig deep into his psyche and say, you know, he was a disturbed child and suddenly got
something.
Hit upside the head, and now he's decided to get some smarts. I don't know. That's going to be tough. Tough sell.
It's a tough sell because you're going to have a play about magic and wizardry with no magic and wizardry. This reminds me of one of my favorite interviews of all time on Conan O'Brien's show. This was when he was on NBC before he moved to the Tonight Show. And his guest was Courtney Thorne Smith and one of my favorite comedians of all time, Norm Macdonald. Courtney Thorne Smith was the second guest, and Norm Macdonald had decided to stay on the couch. So Conan O'Brien was interviewing Courtney Thorne Smith, and she was talking about a movie that was going to be coming out that she was starring in with Carrot Top. And Conan O'Brien was like, wow, is it going to be, you know, like him with all his crazy props and stuff? Because Carrot Top is a prop comic. That's what he does. And she goes, no. And Norm Macdonald interrupts and says, wait a minute, you're going to have a movie with a prop comic with no props in it at all? And then he says, I know the name of this movie is going to be called Box Office Poison. that was unplanned, by the way.
And did the movie ever come out?
I actually saw it.
Okay.
I saw it on videotape.
And your thoughts, was it really as bad as
it's just
a train wreck?
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't take what makes something what it is and then throw it all out and use the same name. And it's like what we always complain about with Transformers, the movies about Transformers, giant robots that transform into things. If you take a lot of that away and focus on Shia LaBeouf and Hot Megan Fox, the movie's called Transformers, not Shia LaBeouf and Hot Megan Fox. It ruins the idea. It's like the new RoboCop movie. If RoboCop is not in the movie, but they call it RoboCop, it's the stupidest idea ever. Or Godzilla, when they remake Godzilla. It wasn't even Godzilla. It was just a lizard. Godzilla, as we all know, is a dinosaur. That ends my rant for that. Let's see what else I have. And I believe, what's this? Now that Lucasfilm and Marvel are both under the Disney umbrella, Marvel has announced that starting in 2015, it will have exclusive rights to the Star Wars franchise for comics and graphic novels. This ends a long-running partnership between LucasArts and Dark Horse, the comic publisher that's handled Star Wars since 1991, and is currently working on a book based on the film's original script. Executives say, Dark Horse Comics have published exceptional Star Wars comics for over 20 years, and we will always be grateful to their enormous contributions and the mythos and terrific partnership that we had. Of course, one of the things that happens when Lucasfilm was bought out, was sold to Marvel and Disney, is that they had decided that they want to make it their own thing as opposed to, once again, sticking to the roots of what the franchise was. That, once again, is a bad idea. As even though Lucas himself kind of flubbed on the three Star Wars movies, the prequels, they still had Star Wars stuff in it. But once Disney and Marvel bought it out, they closed up the shop for all their games, they got rid of their animated series, and now they even said it many times that the expanded Star Wars universe, which has pretty much been the cash cow of the Star Wars franchise, is going to be negated. So people who are diehard Star Wars fans, and not me because I'm an occasional Star Wars fan, there is such things as Heir to the Empire, Shadow of the Empire. There was a game called Shadows of the Empire, which was set in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, where you had this new character doing stuff in between the scenes of the actual movie, what was going on. He was fighting in Hoth, which is in Empire Strikes Back. And in the game, you can see the part where the Millennium Falcon takes off. And he's still hanging back in there to give them cover. So, by saying all this stuff doesn't exist, you're alienating a large portion of your fans. Heir to the Empire was one of the books that supposedly happened after Return of the Jedi, where once you kill the head, as people now nowadays, you don't just kill the Emperor and then everything's all happy and puppies and sunshine. There's still other stuff, there's other evils there. So it continued on. What happens after the Emperor is gone? Who takes his place? They introduced Mara Jade. Mara Jade was Darth Vader's apprentice, because they always have to have two, as they've said in the movies. And it goes on that Mara Jade falls in love with Luke Skywalker. And that goes on to other things. And like I said, I'm not a super Star Wars fan, but these are things that I've heard of and read about. So by saying all of that is just completely wiped off, yes, it gives you an opening for the new fans, but you're alienating most of the fan base. This goes along to something that one of my favorite shows, the Power Rangers, does. They constantly, once they got past like season 5 or season 6, they constantly bring in new actors for the however many episodes they do, 26 episodes, and then the following season they do it again and again and again, which is what the format was for the Japanese production, the Sentai, which is what Power Rangers is based on. What they do is they feel there's some psychology into it, that kids have a small amount of time where something is new and interesting to the time it becomes boring. So you're introduced to something new, you really like it, you enjoy it, and then it's over, and then you're able to move on to something else that's quote-unquote new. So that's how they're able to keep the franchise going, but it has to be familiar. So they still use familiar, you know, the colors, the props, the Zords, they're all the same, but different. Which is why a lot of people have the flash in the pans, which is, oh, this is new, hot, great. They love it so much, and then all of a sudden they hate it. Music is a great example of that, where a song comes out, everybody loves it, and there's parodies, and it gets too much, people get fed up with it, and then it's gone. So that's the reason for that, but people have grown up on Power Rangers. People have grown up on Star Wars. So you want to do something that pleases your fan base, which, in their mind, is kids, but it's realistically the older people. So you can't make something for kids now that you made for kids back then, because times have changed. So when you do something like a Smurf movie, you can't use the same formula back then. You have to do it for people who are grown up on it and who are fans now, and still make it kid friendly, which is quite easy to do. So the Power Rangers do not realize, the company that is, they're starting to realize it, of course, is that the people that grew up on Power Rangers 20 years ago still would watch it, still are interested in that. And companies, which is sad, that it's all, once again, it's a capitalist society, so all about money, and it's about selling toys, which is a lot of reasons why there aren't too many female cartoons out there, because as it's been said many times, women or girls don't buy action figures. They don't buy toys. They forget that people, women have money too. Girls have money too. They want things just as much as boys do. So maybe they should market other stuff as opposed to just toys. Maybe there should be like t-shirts or other merchandisable stuff. So for having the Star Wars move their franchise from Dark Horse, which has been working on this with them for almost 20 years, and putting it in their own house, which makes sense because it's cheaper and they'll make more money off of it, they're sort of hurting the fans. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget, is how important the fans are. I'm sure people out there are fans of tons of products. I'm going to go with the Honeymooners. I was a huge fan of the Honeymooners back in the day. And then some great person, I'm going to say, it's about 15 years ago, somebody said, hey, let's make a new Honeymooners movie. But we're going to put it with an all-black cast and put it in current times. And nobody went to see that because it was a stupid idea. If you're going to make a Honeymooners, you'd have to make it for something back then. You have to set it in the right time period. You have to set it in the with the right characters. And sure, make it a black cast. That's fine. But you lose something if you try to modernize it. Married with Children, one of my favorite television shows, was called the Honeymooners of the 80s. When it was 90s. Honeymooners of the 90s. And if you sit back and think about it, like, well, sort of. It was his own thing, but no one ever broadcasted it as, this is the new Honeymooners. But that was what the scripts were. That's how they were selling it to the actors. But they never went out and said it. So maybe that's what they should do, is say, okay, let's take this idea, but let's not produce it as this is what it was. Let's make it something different. It's kind of like this, but not really. I can think of a couple of movie franchises that just died, fell flat. Bewitched with Will Ferrell. They're like, well, we're going to make a movie about Bewitched. But the movie is going to be about them making a remake of a TV show with a real witch in it, as opposed to just being a television show about a witch. It was too complicated, and it was a bad idea. And jumping on the Will Ferrell bandwagon, he also decided to remake Land of the Lost, a beloved 70s show about people that were high when they were writing it, and they were on a raft, and they went to this lost world where dinosaurs were running around. They did the same thing again. They just took the name to try and cash in on that money without actually coming up with something new and different. Now, I know I'm going to take a lot of flack for this, but the first new Star Trek movie, I felt, along with Superman Returns, which is the fifth movie in the Superman franchise, not including the Man of Steel, I can see what they were trying to do, which was try to please the old fans and invigorate new life into the franchise. And if you watch Superman Returns from that standpoint, you can see how hard all the actors were trying to emulate their predecessors. You can see how hard Brandon Routh was trying to be Christopher Reeve. And they had the music, and they had the story. The story wasn't that great, but if you sit there and just think about it, wow, this is how it should have been. This is what they're trying to do. Had they had a better story, I think the movie would have been a great success, and we wouldn't have Man of Steel right now. But that's beside the point. And Star Trek, the first one, the first remake, or the continuation, which would be, I think, number 11, I think it is. Number 11, if my math is correct. They kept the franchise going. They moved it forward. They didn't say none of this never happened. They kind of just said, this is what happened beforehand. We're even going to have some of the old cast member in it. We're going to bring back Leonard Nimoy. And so it kind of made it right to bring him back, to keep it moving, to please the new fans and the old fans. It's one of the few movies that I've been to in recent times that the audience applauded at the end of the movie, because they're like, wow, it was entertaining, it was true to what it was, and it was new and different. And I think that's an important thing to remember. We have, 5 minutes left? Oh, 3 minutes left. Wow, I talked myself all the way through. I had more in me than I thought I did. So I guess I'm gonna go with the final thought. Let's go 180 on this. I'm gonna make sure everybody has a prosperous 2014. Even though it's just a calendar new year, people love a shared experience. It would make more sense if the new year would be on a equinox or a solstice, as opposed to just a random day of the year, because somebody decided that December is going to be the end of the last month of the year, so that's when the new year is going to be. That makes perfect sense to not me. Hopefully, we'll be doing much better this year. We're going to have more guests, because we've gone back. I've taken a look at the past shows, and we haven't had as many guests on last year's shows. We're going to have more guests, which is something I hope to bring you, and hopefully some big-name guests. I'm still trying to get Jason Day or Frank to be a guest on the show, Power Ranger. And I'm still working on the Magic Garden girls. I've already contacted them, and I'm hoping that we'll get them in there for the 2014. So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you missed any portion of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com, and the archives will be up in a couple days. And I will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.